Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks.
I'm Liz Carley.
And our guest today is Ari Kirschenbaum, writer, director of the indie horror feature Live Evil, which has had its debut at Kamikaze, Stan Lee's Kamikaze out in Los Angeles. And has it played anywhere else, Ari?
Yeah, it was in 6 film festivals so far. I don't know if I can roll them off all by memory, but I think it was Horror in the Hills, Scarathon, the Diabolique International. What was the other one? I'm forgetting. There's a couple more. They're on the website.
I actually felt like I might have heard about this movie before I received it from Summer to review. Did you guys play at the horror film festival in Hollywood, Scarefest, I think it was?
I don't remember if that was it. I don't remember one in L.A., though.
Okay.
So yeah, because I'm drawing kind of a blank on the which ones it's been at and having to keep track.
Well,
but go ahead.
Screamfest, that's what it was.
Screamfest. I don't think it was at the Screamfest.
Maybe I saw it somewhere
else. there's so many titles with the word evil in it, so it's
yeah, that's true.
There's like one in red box every week.
The description of this movie says, Ghostbusters meets Dawn of the Dead as seen through Rod Serling's Twilight Zone. And that alone is fascinating, mind-blowing, and just gets your curiosity going, because you're going, okay, that's humor, that's horror, that's camp. What in the world is this movie, and when can I see it?
Well, that's the goal of those synopses, you know, is to catch them in one line. So hopefully it's a fitting description, and it's not like, I didn't see where's the Ghostbusters, or I didn't get the Twilight Zone vibe from it, you know? You don't want one of those complaints or, like, one of the influences that you listed and then the expectations is kind of not fulfilled in the end.
Well, having seen it, I can safely say that's a very accurate description. The whole
night,
it fits. And I went into this when I reviewed the movie initially. I went in completely blind. Summer basically came to me, I have this movie, can you review it? And I was like, sure. And so I queued it up, I started watching, and I, as I've said before, I'm kind of new to the horror genre, and so I'm getting my first exposure through several of the things I've seen through Slice of Sci-Fi. This was the first one that I actually sat there and I went, okay, it's a horror movie, not too bad, I'm not ready to run screaming, oh crap, that was really funny, wow, this is awesome, what the hell is going on, and it sucked me right in and just loved every second of it.
Well, that's great. That's great. Hopefully I will maintain that the impression will be maintained the more horror movies you watch.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying what I've seen so far, and I think up to this moment, Live Evil is my favorite.
Well, that's great. That's great. What can I ask what you watched before? What were the previous candidates?
Let me see. What else have I seen so far? There was a movie, it was billed as horror, but didn't quite fit the genre so much, Curse of Downers Grove, and I recently saw the remake of Martyrs at Screamfest. That's where I thought I might have picked up the name of Live Evil.
Okay.
And there's a couple of others that I've seen over the course of my life that really made me like, horror is not my thing. But recently,
I
saw those, and then this one, and you know, of the three or four I've seen so far, Live Evil is definitely my favorite.
Oh, that's great! That's great. I mean, one of the other reviewers, one of the reviews, the positive reviews, said that, you know, if you love horror, it has something for you, and even if you don't like horror, it still has something for you, and hopefully that's what most people will find.
So, Ari, give us a really, really quick overview, like the elevator shot of what the movie's about, and then tell us how you came up with the idea for it.
Okay, so someone unleashes evil on a sleepy college town that has like a, you know, a small sheriff station, and this evil starts to take over the sheriff station and the deputies and the sheriff, and then basically anybody it comes in contact with. And through the course of the night, things escalate and other things are unleashed, and it becomes like a battle of good versus evil. And as it speeds towards a severe climax, I hope. So, yeah, I'm bad at breaking it down. That's why I wrote the synopsis of Ghostbusters meets what was it, Dawn of the Dead, or in Rod Serling's Twilight Zone. So.
Well, one of the blurbs said that the danger, the peril ramps up to where it could destroy the town or maybe spread to destroy the whole world.
Right. So right. I always love the start small. No, the rest of the world doesn't know what's going on, and this little, you know, this little tiny, you know, butterfly, what is it, the sound of thunder, you know, the butterfly's wings, the end of the world type thing. So it was like a Halloween party that could end up in destroying the world.
So you wrote and directed this. What inspired the story? Was it literally a bad Ouija game at a frat party?
No. Usually I'll come up with like one image like start with just the basic, you know, basic idea for a scene, and then just write myself into a corner and try to write myself out of the corner and like in some linear fashion and just follow that scene. I don't remember what was the major, I think the major concept was this force, or I'm a huge aficionado of, you know, the devil takes over movies, you know, like The Exorcist or Seventh Sign or The Omen, you know, any of that devil good versus evil thing. And so I thought that what would be, you know, a great terror that the devil could unleash. And I thought that it making everybody see what they fear the most would be a great thing to play on. And, you know, then you start thinking about what setting would it be good, and where you can contain it, and it not, you know, it is a low budget movie, so you can't be like, oh, and then we'll bring in the army and it takes over New York. You know, there's only so much you can do, so you got to keep constantly reminding yourself of this. It has to be low budget, so you can't go here, you can't go here. What can be self-contained but still be grand scale? So. Does that answer it?
Yeah, that's fine. How long did it take to make this?
It took a while not to shoot it. We only had 21 days to shoot it. And part of the problem why it took so long after in post was we had an actress a different actress in the lead, and she didn't work out 6 days in, 5 days in. And so we had to replace her, and we got Charlene. So we didn't exactly extend the shooting schedule, so we had to make up for those days within the days that were left. So it was like a really hurried production, and then the post lasted a long time. Not the editing as much as I had to animate all those eyes and do all the effects. And there's actually a lot of effects in the movie. I think I went back and counted, and there's like 400 and something effect shots. And then I was like looking up online, and like I think the original Star Wars had less than that.
Meowza.
It doesn't feel like it, but there are. There's little fixes. There's, you know, when it starts to snow ash, you know, for the last half of the movie or last, you know, 30 minutes of the movie, you know, every shot has to have it. in there. So.
Yeah, no, so I thought the effects...
That took a while, and it was a team of me.
Oh, wow.
Well, me, that's off to you, sir. That was the effects looked great, and I really loved what motivated you to shoot the way you did in terms of having the first half done strictly in black and white and then switching over to color. What kind of was the impetus behind that?
Well, during the editing, we realized that, you know, it does have, there's a tone shift, you know, once it gets to the middle of things, and there's a reason for it in the story. I mean, well, not there's a reason for it in the story, but there's a reason for a shift in the story. But the tone shift in the story, it was there to begin with, and things start getting a lot funnier than the beginning. The beginning is a little bit more serious, and particularly towards the beginning is a little bit more scary, and then it shifts. So we had this shift in the editing that we're kind of worried about or unsure about, and then just at a certain point editing the beginning, I realized this is so like a, because it wasn't really written consciously like that, this is so much like a Twilight Zone episode. What happens if I make it in black and white? Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden the beginning just made so much more sense. And then saving the shift towards the end. I was a champion of, but there was a fight with that of where to put the, you know, the shift in without spoiling it, the shift in visual style. So,
well, it sounds like the visual change, the actual choice to start out black and white and then go to color, has been something that a lot of people who've seen it enjoyed.
Yeah, and that's a great validation, because that's a hard thing to deal with distribution, because if distributors get even a whiff that it's in black and white, they're still on this old stigma of, well, that's death. People only want to see color, you know?
Well, yeah, having seen it, I really have to say that the change in the cinematography there, you know, going black and white to color, and with you talking about how it kind of indicated the shift in the direction of the story or the speed or the intent, it actually helped bring that home more for me. It's like I'm sitting there, I'm watching it, I'm kind of in this, you know, black and white thing, okay, this look all going on, and when it switched to color, it became more vibrant. I could definitely feel, you know, there's a lot more going on. And oddly enough, when I was watching it, it almost felt a little the opposite. At the beginning, the black and white, it really drove the point home that you're in this sleepy little town. There's something sinister going on, but it felt a little more spoofy. Like, you know, black and white, old horror movie type thing. But then when it switched to color, it felt like it got more intense.
Yeah, I can totally see that, because, I mean, you see nothing in black and white anymore. It's like one film out of, you know, every 5 years, a small film is made in black and white.
Right.
And so now it's such a stylistic choice that you're trying, you get this vibe of like, oh, they must be making fun of it. You know, it's a satire.
Right, and right,
that's
exactly.
That's why it's in black and white. And I don't disagree with that at all, because I think, you know, it adds another layer to it, because you're thinking, what's this? It's like referencing. You're acknowledging that there's, you know, referencing going on. It's, you know, a pastiche, because...
Right, yeah.
Because it's in black and white, but obviously it's, you know, we're not set in the 50s. You know, there's people with cell phones, there's people, I don't know if there's any cell phones up until the color, but, you know, there's computers. So,
yeah.
You know, so there's an anachronistic thing going on. So your mind is searching for what else is going on? What else is this about? So. Hopefully it's not a cheap thing, and you're being fooled into thinking there's something else going on, but there isn't.
If anything, I would think that it would make people pay more attention because you, when you shoot something in black and white, you lose a lot of the stuff you think you take for granted, some of the background stuff, and now it's in black and white, and you're paying more attention, trying to see what you think the filmmaker might be trying to slip by you.
Right, and absolutely. It's your brain is so much. It's in a completely different mode. I don't know if it's because it's simpler. The screen flattens in a way, and it flattens so much that it's just easier for your brain to digest. So you can notice other things like what the actors are doing or what one particular line of dialogue. And there's a lot of dialogue that's thrown away in the movie if you're not paying attention. Like I think one of the reviewers thought that one of the characters dies, and it actually isn't. but of course that happens in the color part. So, you know, maybe the color is so distracting at that point that you get confused.
Well, and again, it was a little bit the opposite for me. When I was watching in black and white, I thought I knew what was going on. Okay, this is all pretty straightforward. Then it switched to color, and then I started seeing, you know, not to spoil anything for anyone, I started seeing the affected people. And in color, it's like, oh, there's something else going on here. And that shift made me think, okay, so what is the difference between these affected people and these affected people? And then at the end of the movie, it was kind of like, oh my God.
Right, because you can't see that there's important color information going on.
Yes.
But it's kind of like saving something. When it's in black and white, you know, well, there's what's happening with that color is important. But you notice it in black and white too. It's just that when it turns to color, now there's something new for you. Oh, okay, now that back in when it was black and white, that was that color and that was this color.
Yeah, it's like, you know, what am I not seeing? Oh, that's what I'm not seeing.
Right. If I had that from the beginning, it kind of would have been too easy.
Exactly.
Understand what's going on.
Yeah. I totally agree. Yeah.
Now, were you faced with any other production challenges other than doing an inordinately large amount of special effects on your own?
Well, yeah, the whole thing was kind of plagued, unfortunately.
Oh, jeez.
Other than replacing the actors, that was really hard, to make up for it on an even rushed production schedule, but. And then there was just stuff. People were creating crises, yeah, to deal with. Even when there wasn't, you know, there'd be days where like, what do we have scheduled to shoot? Oh, nothing. And so it's like, okay, well,
hard to believe you want a 20-some-odd-day shoot.
there was stuff, but it'd be like, oh, this actor's not available today. It's raining. And you know, and we lost another day, I think, when the power at our main location went out. It was like a power outage. We shot all the sheriff station stuff at a detective agency here in North Carolina.
Oh.
And so they lost like the whole section of this of the town lost power. So
wow.
Couldn't shoot anything on those days either. Yeah, so it was difficult.
So was this?
What was that?
I said, was this your first experience directing and producing a film?
No, this is my second film. My first one went, which was quite a while ago. It went much smoother. It had its own issues, but it nothing compared to this because we were. The crew was younger. I was younger. Maybe that was part of it. And you know that when you deal with a young crew, they're more energetic. Obviously, but, you know they're not as bitter. So you know you can get them to have the spirit, even though you get these setbacks.
They're young and idealistic and full of promise.
And because they're young, you can run them faster and farther on caffeinated drinks and pizza.
Well, yeah. How true that
yeah,
is.
There was a lot of Red Bulls. There was a lot of issues with the Red Bull. What kind of Red Bull were we getting? I don't like the diet. I don't need rock
now
star
all
Red
the
Bull.
Juicy Red Bull stories come out.
Oh, my goodness.
Right.
Tales of Red Bull use on the set.
Yeah. They all kept up with it, and they all did a great job because, you know, it was the middle of winter, and it was freezing. I had, like, trouble getting, like, the actors to get out of the car or out of the, you know, location to shoot outside because it was getting so cold.
Oh,
and in the
wow.
middle of the night, too. We'd shoot to, like 3 or 4 in the morning sometimes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow. So what is the future release schedule for Live Evil? Because right now, I think it's still doing festival circuits and it's not widely available yet?
No, it's not widely available because we're still talking to distributors. So.
Okay.
So there is no immediate plan. I mean, obviously the goal is we'd like the widest release possible, but, mm-hmm. you know, hopefully it'll be available on, you know, streaming or, you know, even better in Redbox. I mean,
I certainly hope so. I need to get my hands on this thing so I have my own copy to keep.
Hopefully there'll be a demand for it.
Well, is it going to be playing at any future festivals or conventions that people can go check it out for themselves?
You can always go to the website, and it's liveevilmovie.com, and that we have updates of where it can be seen next, like festivals and stuff like that.
But, excellent.
That's about all the news that I have. Whenever there is news, I put it up on the webpage.
Well, thank you very much for basically making the time to create a fun and interesting horror movie. Like I said, Liz totally enjoyed it.
I did.
That's great.
I like it. I love it. I want more of it.
There you go. That
makes it worth it.
Yeah, for our Slice of Sci-Fi listeners, we will have links to where you can find out more about the movie. Go to their website, look for it coming to your area, if it's coming to your area. We'll have a link to Liz's review of it. And like I said, she gushed, waxed poetic even.
Oh, for sure.
But thank you for your time today, Ari.
Thank you, Ari.
Oh,
it was wonderful
no
to meet
problem.
You.
Oh, it's good to meet you guys, too.
And the movie is Live Evil. Check it out in your area if it's coming to you, and as soon as it's available on streaming or distribution or DVD or Blu-ray, we will let you know because some of us want to get our hands on it to see for ourselves and continue to just smile and jump a little bit.
Abso-freaking-lutely.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Slice of Sci-Fi. You're home from the comic book store with your favorite titles. Wouldn't they read better while listening to Krypton Radio?
You know, I don't know what it is about talking with indie filmmakers, but there's just an energy there, an enthusiasm there, a delight at the fact that they made what they set out to make. They got there. They did it. They finished it. They had an idea. They said, this is the movie I want to make, and they made it. And whether it be horror or sci-fi or paranormal, you have to appreciate the joy that goes into these sorts of projects and the wider open distribution system that exists today, where we get to see more of these projects. I don't know how any of these films would have gotten to the fans without the internet, without the explosion in film festivals that exists now, genre film festivals, niche film festivals that focus on these types of projects. There are so many different horror-only film festivals, sci-fi-only film festivals, subgenre in sci-fi and horror film festivals, where people can go to enjoy movies they might not have had a chance to ever see 20 years ago. I don't know, is it too much of a good thing? Not yet. Hopefully it won't become too much of a good thing. I think some of the better, and I'm not alone with this, some of the better storytelling, story crafting is being done in a lot of independent and small budget features because they aren't tethered to the studio system where 50 people submit notes on a project and all 50 of them have to be listened to or their suggestions have to be taken seriously and implemented or else you'll never work in this town again, as the joke goes. Either way, we need more science fiction indies. It's so easy to make horror movies than sci-fi movies, probably because of the special effects budget or, in the case of some projects, lack thereof. Then again, that's what a lot of the Netflix originals and Hulu originals seem to be getting these days. Budgets. Amazon. I still need to buckle down and watch Man in the High Castle. No, I have not seen that yet. You can feel free to harass me about that one. Here I am. Huge PKD fan, haven't watched Amazon's Man in the High Castle yet. Yep, I have a lot of stuff on my I need to watch this list, both Hulu, Netflix, rentals, DVDs, Blu-rays. A lot of stuff out there, not enough time to watch it all. I need a time turner, or something like it. But anyway, that'll do it for this episode. If you have any questions or comments, call in. The number is 602-635-6976. Leave us a voicemail, or you can email in with something you've recorded yourself. The email address to use is summer@sliceofscifi.com. If you're on iTunes, leave us a review. Leave us a rating. Every little bit of feedback helps. It helps me make a better show for you. How's that? Check us out on Twitter, @SliceOfSciFi. Just check us out on Google+, Slice of Sci-Fi. And of course, there's the website, SliceOfSciFi.com. We also have WritersAfterDark.com, KickAssMysticNinjas.com. We have It'sComicBookDay.com. And yes, because of our dear friend Jenny, we have started a new site that expands beyond the sci-fi and horror genres into all things that touch on, what's the word I used, the zeitgeist of pop culture. So it's not really populated, built up the way I think I want it yet, but we're getting there. We have some reviews. The site is popculturegeeks.com. If you want to be a contributor to Pop Culture Geeks, send me an email. We'll see what we have there. Again, everyone who's been donating or pledging through Patreon, thank you so much for your kind donations. It does keep things running around here. I'm totally honest about that. without your support, the hosting for the websites and the media for these shows, would be hard pressed for me to keep up with that. That includes all of the back episodes of Babylon Podcast, of Kick-Ass Mystic Ninjas, the early, early episodes of It's Comic Book Day, the complete podcasts for several other shows that are out there. Those podcasts are still available for people to listen to, thanks to your support. So thank you to each and every one of the Slice of Sci-Fi supporters out there. If you also want to pledge your support, you can do so over at Patreon. That's patreon.com/sliceofscifi. Also, my thanks go out to Sci-Fried, my favorite geek rock band, for the music provided in the opening, closing, and intermediary themes. You can find out more about their music over at sci-friedband.com. And if you happen to be in an area where they're playing a gig, definitely go check them out. You'll have fun. And that will do it for this episode, but we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.